This is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Waiting for Gary Hill. So in the meantime, let's go to Roberto. Hey, Roberto, how are you? Yes, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me? Yeah, John, I was thinking about the comparison with Russell Wilson and Carson Wentz last year. And I thought that if you had put Carson Wentz on the Seahawks, they would have gone 7-6 and 10, 7-9. If you had put Russell Wilson on the Eagles, they could have gone anywhere from 14-2 to 16-0. What do you think about that?
Well, it's funny because I don't know what it is this offseason, and I think it's due that there's more and more recognition of Russell Wilson because, you know, you notice that what he was 11th, I think, in voting, putting him in the top five of quarterback, according to the NFL Network, you know, in the players' votes. But I see more and more people now putting him, you know, in the top three, which I saw one yesterday that had him in the top three, which kind of surprised me. I mean, clearly he's a top five quarterback, you know, and Wentz is now still evolving. And, you know, I know that he probably jumped him in the NFL Network, which, again, I always have to wait until the third and fourth year to really settle in and have, you know, Wentz is doing it. But it takes time to get up there. But no, I think that Wilson is now getting the recognition, and Pro Football Focus has been cranking out all kind of stuff that's been positive about Russell Wilson. I mean, incredible numbers in the fourth quarter. You know, his accuracy, his ability to throw the ball into the end zone, those type of things. So I think what's happening now, there's more and more recognition of how good Russell Wilson is. And even though Wentz may have a chance to be one of the best quarterbacks in the league, I still contend that at the moment, I mean, Russell Wilson has the big edge over him. But Wentz is going to be a great one.
Yeah, I don't doubt that Wentz will be a great one. But at this point, last year they were competing, up until November, they were competing for the MVP. And I thought it was clearly Russell Wilson was so much better with so much less.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Wentz had so much more around him than Wilson did.
Well, I mean, particularly, I mean, you know, they have four $6 million plus offensive linemen and four Pro Bowl caliber offensive linemen on the Philadelphia Eagles. I mean, they've got one of the best offensive lines, and that's a good benefit to Carson Wentz because then he's able to, you know, have more protection, do more things. The scheme also helped. But no, I think that, you know, Russell's really starting to get his due right now as far as respect, and it's coming off a season where until December he was an MVP candidate. Now he'll start the season out again as an MVP candidate. Roberto, thank you for the phone call. And now, joined by Gary Hill, who is at the Moderna Marina broadcast down in Colorado, getting ready for the Rockies games tonight. And I guess more than anything else, what's so noticeable out of the 7-game stretch, you know, 9-game stretch, if you want to call it, this team needs a couple days off.
Oh, yeah. The All-Star break is coming at a great time. Mariners kind of limping in. They're just beat up. I mean, Zanino's on the DL, obviously, but you know, Segura's dealing with stuff. Seager, the same thing. Last night, Gamble had to play center because Haneker and Span are both beat up, and especially in this expansive outfield, you need your healthiest guy in center field, so that's what they did. They're just kind of limping to the break. Of course, you know, Paxton on the DL, Felix on the DL as well. All-star at break coming at a very, very good time for this team.
Oh, no question. And, you know, it's got to be concerning. Again, fortunately, these are minor injuries. And with the 10-day break for both Felix Hernandez and James Paxton, that, you know, they should be okay after the all-star break. But, boy, it's got to be scary. And I think what it does, it shows Jerry DePoto that his instinct is going to be right. He's got to pick up a starting pitcher or two just to kind of get everything through this.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's been their plan all along, so I don't think anything changes there. The All-Star break actually works out nice, too, because we've talked about, you know, Gonzalez and Paxton's innings. Paxton, it's convenient to go on the DL because he wasn't going to pitch in 10 days anyway from the last time he was going to pitch, and he wasn't going to pitch straight out of the All-Star break anyway. So that was the plan going in, so nothing really changes there, and it's a way to give him a little bit of an extra break and try and back off a little bit of those innings. But that's what we've talked about before. We've talked about this, that this team could use another starter, go to a six-man, more coverage in case of injuries. And now with a couple guys beat up, we've seen seen that show itself. But, you know, the All-Star breaks, it's going to be great for the position players, obviously, but also for the pitchers as well. Get an extra few days before the second half.
No question. And I think you can see the philosophy because, you know, again, that's what I like about Jerry DePoto because, I mean, he's always inventive. He always is trying to stay ahead of different things, and he's always willing to try different things. And so, you know, once they brought up two pitchers from Tacoma, and you kind of say, okay, we got to use some of these guys to start getting that out and taking advantage of the five-game lead they have over the A's, the fact that they come back after the All-Star game, taking on the White Sox, you know, just trying to be a little bit more cautious and start to protect what's there as opposed to just go all the way through and just attack, attack, attack.
No, he's always creative, and that's why I'm really excited to see what they do. I mean, we hear all the names that swirl around and some of the rumors, but honestly, I don't think any of us have any idea what Jerry DePoto has up his sleeve and what he might do for this team. And I'm excited to see what they do in the second half. This first half has been fantastic. I think if you asked any Mariners fan, would they take a five-game lead for the second wild card and just four back of Houston, you know, just 2 days before the All-Star break. I think everyone would take that, that's for sure. Hopefully they can finish this first half strong. But what a fun first half it's been, and I'm looking forward to the second half as well. Really excited to see what they do to improve the team as we move forward.
Oh, yeah, I think that's going to be good. But I think you can see that some of the trends, and I guess when you make 65, 66 trades, I mean, you know, there's a little bit more transparency. And so what I would envision, in fact, that's probably one of my little projects this week. I'm going to go through, you know, the drafts of like 213 to 215, see which first and second round pitchers might be available on losing teams, and then see if, because they'll try to pick up a pitcher under control for at least several years, as opposed to, I think, just going for some big name guy on a rental.
Yeah, because that's not something they've done. I mean, we've seen him really think outside the box in this regard. You know, last year, thinking a step ahead with Leake and Gonzalez, and both those moves have paid off huge for this year. And he's control has been the key word in a lot of these moves, not only thinking for right now, but thinking for the future as well in the next year or two. And that it's paid huge dividends because now you look at this roster, there is team control up and down the roster with the exception of just a couple of guys. That's really exciting, too, not only for this year and the things they can do, but looking forward to the next year as well.
Yeah, and what I like is that, and I think one of the keys was, getting a deal with Segura at a very affordable price because now most of the position players, because I counted it up the other day, there's only like maybe three or four free agents coming up in the next 2 years total. I mean, three or four next year, three after that. And, you know, that included, and of course, one was changed when, you know, Wade LeBlanc got his deal done, and they'll have team control over that for 4 years. I think that's a beauty because, you know, what they can do is extend things with this team as far as success to 2021 at least.
No, I totally agree because as we were looking at a previous kind of core group of, you know, Felix and Cano and Cruz and that kind of the core, he has built a younger core, you know, of Segura, who you just mentioned, Haniger's in that mix as well, to come up right behind this group. And, you know, we've talked about it before. I think the Arizona trade was a total game changer for this team to get two All-Stars this year in one deal, which is pretty incredible. Both those guys are having major impacts this season, Segura and Haniger. I can't imagine where this team would be without either of them. They've both been fantastic offensively. Defensively, they've both been superb as well. And it's that move alone, I mean, all the other moves around the edges as well, they've been outstanding. You go down the list with Blanc and everyone else. But, man, that move is such a game changer for this organization.
Oh, no question. And that's what I think the beauty of what you can see from what he's done, and particularly, because that what takes his team up to 9 to 10 guys that have been to the All-Star game, and that puts them in the same type of ballpark. Again, this team isn't as talented as Houston, maybe not as much as Boston and the Yankees, but at least it puts them in the conversation because – when you look at four that go, that's a pretty respectable number, and a couple others who qualified, that was great.
No, I think it's really great. I mean, I was glad to see it too, because they had a number of guys that had All-Star quality first halves, and to see them get rewarded like that was pretty fun. And the way Segura got in was pretty spectacular too. I thought Mariners fans were terrific. It was not only getting the vote up, but it was a phenomenon. It was so much fun to watch, you know, the event at Safeco Field and all the people turned out for it and the votes and social media going crazy. It was great. That was a lot of fun, and what a way to get him in. And I know he feels great about it. And talk about a guy who signs, you know, a long-term deal with a club, and to feel the love from the fans like that, I think that's fantastic.
Yeah, no question. And then, of course, it gets closer now to getting Robinson Cano back, and so, and I think you can see more and more. And I went off the deep side about a week ago, and then reeled myself back in, thinking, you know, wouldn't it be okay to find some kind of deal that maybe you can get under that contract? And I'm thinking, no. I mean, it's now up to like point. He's half a run a game. I mean, when he's in there, it's 4.6. Now, of course, with the slump and all that, it's down into the low fours. But it's like he's now worth at least a half run per game.
I give him a lot of credit because the loss of Cano has been masked by just the fact they've been winning a lot. I mean, they've won a ton of games. They've overcome his absence for the most part. And I give them a lot of credit. But his bat has been missed. I don't think there's any question about it. I mean, you think back to the season that he's had. Slashing 287, 385, 441. He was having a fantastic offensive season, batting third in the order, and we know the kind of hitter he's been down through the years. And that's a big loss for this team, and it's shown up. You know, they've played a ton of close games. They've won a ton of close games. But some of the losses, I mean, you think about, man, you know, what if Cano would have been in there and just one swing? That can make all the difference. He is going to be welcome back. No question about it. It's going to be a great bat to have back in the lineup for this team. It's going to be interesting to see how it plays out in terms of where he plays. He's going to play a lot, though. I don't think there's any question, especially depending on what the race looks like. You know, are the Mariners just a couple games back from Houston? Are the A's still right there on the Mariners' heels as well? I think that will factor in to the playing time and where everyone plays as well. Things I think are going to be very interesting around that date as we head towards mid-August.
Oh, yeah, but no question.
It's going to be great to have him back, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah. And so I think, that, I mean, now, again, I guess absence gets you the appreciation, and now his absence, I think, now shows you how valuable he is to this team. Now, I think I was going through this morning because I wanted to take a look at, you know, can you predict Nelson Cruz's demise, right? And you start to look and say, yeah, what I look at is like, okay, you got Adrian Beltre and you got Albert Pujols, and you can see that Albert Pujols, his WAR number is down to like 1.7, so he's no longer at that MVP type league. But what I look at, you know, Beltre, I think, what, got a 2-year deal at 36, and you know, I still go back and use that model of what they did with David Ortiz, giving him like I think 15 or 16 a year on a 2-year deal. I think it's right in the wheelhouse that as well as Cruz is, you can justify doing a 2-year deal or a 1+1 deal that keeps him on this roster, even though he'll be 40 if he does 2 years.
He's amazing. It's incredible to watch him play. I mean, we all know Father Time catches up to everyone when it's all said and done at some point, but he is showing no signs of slowing down. The numbers are fantastic as always. The exit velocity is ridiculous as always. He's thundering baseballs all over the yard. I think the Mariners are doing a very smart thing, by the way, in this Colorado series and just keeping him out of the outfield, you know, keeping him healthy for the second half, because that's really the only thing that slowed him down is just some of the nagging leg injuries through the first half, but he's played through it, and he's had another all-star season. He's been amazing. His workout regimen is ridiculous. I think we've all seen that and read about that. I mean, no one works harder and thinks about nutrition and that sort of thing like Nelson Cruz does. But, I mean, to your point, 5 out of the last 6 all-star seasons for Nelson Cruz. He's racked up some huge power numbers through the years. A great guy on top of everything else, a huge leader in the clubhouse. Yeah, I love watching him play and hope he's around for years to come. We'll see.
Yeah, so I think when the next piece of business, I mean, right after they get some kind of a deal done for Scott Service, I mean, to get his contract extension, but I think that would ease everybody's mind if they do something with Nelson Cruz.
It'd be great to have him back, that's for sure. I mean, he's been a fantastic Mariner, and I was thinking about this the other day, some of the great free agent signings in Mariners history, and no question Nelson Cruz is towards the top of that list. You think about the production from when the Mariners signed him, and man, he's been good. I mean, he's 44 homers, 43 homers, 39 homers, 22 so far this year. The production has been amazing.
Oh, no question. And that's going to be the fun to do it. So now, last two games before the All-Star break, you know, they definitely need some good pitching coming out with, you know, to get this through. And, of course, on the mound tonight is going to be Wade LeBlanc, who's been fantastic. And, of course, after that, Mike Leake, who's been a little shaky here in the last couple starts.
Yeah, and they're going to have to score. There's no question in Colorado. You've got to find a way to score runs because pitching here is very, very difficult. And we talk about the thin air and we talk about the home runs and the ball does fly out. But when you're here looking at the outfield, it is massive. I mean, outfielders seem like they're 9 miles apart from one another. It's just so easy for bloops and bleeders and gap shots to get in. It's so hard to pitch here. Even if you execute pitches and jam a guy, it can easily turn into a double if they, you know, get it off the end of the bat in the right spot. So it's just really difficult to pitch here. You've got to find a way to score runs. You've got to put runs on the board. They did last night. They ended up putting 7 on the board, but not enough. So tough place to pitch, obviously. It'd be great to get the next two. It's not going to be easy. Colorado's playing some great baseball. They're really playing well. The expectations for them are really high coming into the season. They have a really powerful lineup, a great 1-2 punch in Blackman and Arenado. Tyler Anderson's going tomorrow, who's been one of their best pitchers. And Gray, who's supposed to be their ace, getting called back up today after being sent down. He's going to be a couple of tough games to see if they can end, though, on a high note in what has been a fantastic first half.
Hey, I know, of course, he'll be listening here the last night. You take any time off during the All-Star break?
Oh, yeah, we're going to get away, get some time off. It's a grind for everyone, so it'll be nice to get a couple of days off and just relax for a couple of days and get ready for what is going to be a sensational second half. Can't wait.
Gary, thanks for joining us.
Oh, anytime, John. Great to talk, as always.
All right, Gary Hill on the Mariner broadcast, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com. More John Clayton.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Give us a call. Yeah, so your thoughts on the first half of the season. It's been a great one. I mean, as far as 21 games above 500, the chance if they can go 500 the rest of the way to have a 91-92 win season, great chance to make the playoffs. They still can't get overconfident because if they do, the A's are catching up, and these next two games will be critical to see if they can gain more ground because they've been hot. They lost last night. The A's did to San Francisco 7-1. Kind of interesting that all three teams that are, you know, really busting, the Angels, the Mariners, and the A's, are all in playing National League teams and interleague play. It was kind of interesting. I know yesterday, you know, the thought is clearly that the All-Stars are pretty much in the American League. You know, 6 All-Stars with the Astros. Boston has 5 and, you know, 4 now for the Mariners. I know that, you know, it was broken down that, you know, if you go with war, I think on in Baseball Reference, 15 of the top 25 pitchers are in the American League. Yet, the National League is deeper, and they've got a 14-game lead as far as interleague play because they've got more winning teams and less teams that are trying to, you know, break things down and tank. You know, what I'm talking about tanking is, you know, just getting rid of the players and trying to get draft choices and that. I was working a few little database things on that and, you know, kind of seeing that which teams are getting better. And, you know, Tampa Bay is starting to catch up. I mean, you look, Miami's done a pretty good job of loading up on some good young talent, but they're paying the price right now because when you have in the tanking cities, people aren't going to the games, understandably, because you don't have expectations of winning. Still trying to figure out what Baltimore did to get so bad. I mean, Kansas City, I think, really is one of the sad stories because, I mean, here's been a franchise that has been so good for so long, and yet, you know, they lose so many players and got rid of so many players that they're, you know, on a pace to lose probably more than 110 games, and their farm system is, you know, among the 10 worst. That's not good. Baltimore is among the 10 worst, but that's the way you do it, and that's why it's fortunate for the fans of this city. They don't have to endure a breakdown because that's 5 years, 6 years, and no guarantee that you're going to be good. Give us a call at 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Chime in on your thoughts on Joe Thomas. Chime in on the thoughts on what player would you try to sign the first to at least get some kind of contract extension. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. The John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, more John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN, taking phone calls to the top of the hour. Give us a caller here. We'll chat with anything you want to get into. Kind of interesting, Jabari Parker, who gets that restricted offer taken away from Milwaukee, ends up signing a two-year, $40 million deal with the Chicago Bulls. Bit of a surprise there. I was really disappointed at what happened with Isaiah Thomas. I mean, Isaiah Thomas, he goes from Boston to Cleveland, doesn't work out in Cleveland. They ship him over to the Lakers. He still had problems with injuries in the hip, and then he ended up taking a one-year, $2 million deal with the Denver Nuggets, where I thought a year ago at this time, he was set up to maybe be able to go get a max contract. And so he's going to have to go try to prove it and do all those things, you know, get through the injuries and show that he can stay healthy. He's 29 years old. He can still get some money next year, but I thought that was a little bit of a surprise that he had to really take it on the chin as far as the finances to try to get something done. But at least I thought he was going to go to Orlando. I thought that was going to work out, but now turns out he's not going to go there. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. The you know, of course, the Earl Thomas story is not going to go away, and unfortunately I guess it can be a distraction for training camp, but you know, the Seahawks just have to kind of hang in there and see how it's going to go. And it's a shame, because to see the breakup of the Legion of Boom the way it is, all kind of in one year, is sad. Because, you know, I know USA Today talked about it, you know, 2 weeks ago. It's the best secondary in the history of the league, topping the Steeler team that I covered back as in secondary back in the 70s. I mean, you know, you have two possible Hall of Fame candidates, three if you want to include Cam Chancellor. In fact, I don't know. Give us a call at 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Where would you put Cam in relationship to the Legion of Boom? Obviously, he's one of the best players in the league, the strongest hitting, strong safety, meant so much to this team. But where would you kind of put him in the pantheon of the second? Because I think he'll fall short of the Hall of Fame, but I think that certainly he's going to get, you know, one of the honors, you know, to go on the Wall of Fame and all that stuff here in Seattle for the Seahawks, because he just meant so much and played so well. So give us a call and your thoughts there. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Your thoughts also on Nelson Cruz. How quickly do you want a deal done with Nelson Cruz, or are you willing to move on, knowing it's going to cost probably $16 million to sign him to some kind of a contract extension? I think it's going to be worth it, because I think he's so valuable, both in the clubhouse, on the field, and at bat. I mean, I think you're seeing, even though they scored 7 runs last night, that you know, they were certainly short, because he wasn't able to play because of the designated hitter not being allowed in the game in the National League parks, a rule that I hope that they fix, because I think it's a rule that certainly is outdated, and I think somewhere down the line they need to do it. Well, who do we have in the line? Let's go to Dwayne. Hey, Dwayne, how are you?
Hey, how's it going?
Oh, Wayne, is it Wayne?
Hello, John.
Yes, hello. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing this day?
Doing well.
Great. Hey, going to the Seahawks here. I think what we are seeing right now is kind of a regrow and get better. Even though they were great, I mean, we've gotten old too, and some teams have seen the weaknesses, and it's a rebuild. There's no question about it. And I certainly expected this to come. I knew one day it was that we were going to start losing our guys. I just I hope we can get as good players back.
Yeah, and again, it's kind of inevitable, because I've been looking at the runs of teams and all this stuff, and usually when you get to the 7 and 8 year mark, mostly it's 6, but it's like, I think they wisely tried to squeeze one more year out of it, and they paid a couple prices for it. You know, the Cam Chancellor contract that, you know, they're still going to be paying for. So that did hurt, but that it shows you, because when you start to get guys to go to their third contract, it's almost like what you saw in years ago when they were doing the 10-year, $240 million deals in baseball. At some point, it catches up to you. Because the level of play doesn't equal the level of the money. And even though Cam Chancellor's level of play equaled what the $12 million a year he was getting, you know, the body just broke down with the neck injury. And that's the unfortunate part. And that's what happens. I know, you know, you look at the Steeler team. Now, back then, there was no free agency, and salaries were more under control for teams. And so you can keep guys longer, 10, 12, 13 years. But once you get past that 8-year mark, and the 8-year mark puts you at 29 or 30, then things get a little bit dicey.
Oh, yeah, there's no question about it. This team has been very successful, and we've been, as fans, have enjoyed it. And, of course, we want to see more of it again. But there does come a time when you got to make changes, and that's what we're in right now.
Yeah, but, of course, I mean, and that's the nice part about when owners are smart enough to keep coaches around that are successful, because you kind of see the pattern. You know what it is in New England. You know, some years they're going to go and make a lot of trades for guys toward the end of their rookie contracts and, you know, test them out because they're going to be more experienced and do more things quickly than the rookies. And then some years they're going to go for the rookies. But I think what you're seeing is a repeat of what Pete was doing back in 2011. You know, they have the 2010 season. You know, they get 240, 250 transactions, then they start settling in, and then opportunity opens up like it did for Marcus Trufant, gets an injury. Next thing you know, here comes a starter in Richard Sherman. Then Cam Chancellor gets his chance to start. You know, you have Earl Thomas and Russell Okung, and so you're really starting to build. And then, they get the quarterback, and everything goes. But back in 2011, they still continued to add. And they were still able to get some good players. But here's where the difference is. They didn't have a top five, top three, top four, whatever you want to call Russell Wilson type quarterback. They didn't have that. Yeah. They have Pro Bowlers still on this team. Whether it's Doug Baldwin, Dwayne Brown, they have two Pro Bowl linebackers. For now, they have Earl Thomas. We'll see how long that lasts. And then they have two Pro Bowl guys from special teams, Tyler Lockett, as far as a returner, DJ Alexander. So there's still more talent than 2011. And if they can get things going correctly on the running game, then that's going to make things easier for the defense. And, then you'll see more of a Frank Clark emerge. I think you can get the 39 to 40 sacks.
Yeah, I think this season's going to be an interesting one. But great coaches bring the best out in players, and we're certainly blessed by having Pete Carroll. That has been just outstanding to have a coach like that. And that, like I say, that's what made these other guys like Chancellor and that just come and rise up, is because of the coaching behind them.
Oh, no question about that. I think that's what's so great. And, I mean, I think when you see most polls, and this is a time of the poll seasons and rankings and stuff like that, Pete still ranks among the top three or four coaches in the league. I mean, Bill Belichick's going to get the win. Andy Reid's going to be up there. I think you can see that on the rise is going to be Doug Peterson. But, Pete's still solid in what he does. And I think, if you kind of trust the leadership that he brings and what he's trying to do and what John Snyder does as far as player acquisition, it tends to work. Hey, thank you for the phone call.
Thank you, John. Have a great day.
Okay, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Rick. Hey, Rick.
Hey, good morning, John.
Good morning.
I was listening to you talk about the Legion of Boom, and everything has its time. And, of course, their time ran out. But like I said before, last time we spoke, Earl, he does not want to be here. He'd like to be elsewhere. And I think the Seahawks are going to be respectful of the years that he gave them and try to accommodate him. But, of course, they're going to look out for the team first.
Which is a smart thing to do.
Yeah. A lot of people have been commenting about the Seahawks drafting recently because they haven't been as successful as they have in the past. If you remember, Pete Carroll came from college. And he was exposed to a lot of college players, as he was fresh in the league. And he hit on a lot of players that he knew of. Maybe he didn't play against them. Some he played against, some he didn't. But he knew the players. Jimmy Johnson, if you remember, Jimmy Johnson did the same thing in Dallas. He came from college, and he knew a bunch of talented players that a lot of people didn't know of. And he ended up drafting them. And their rise was sudden, all of a sudden they were hitting on lower draft picks and not necessarily first rounders.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's some of the things that the Seahawks are missing right now. They're not exposed to the college talent like they were when Pete Carroll first came in the league.
Yeah, but things changed too. You now, as he came into the league, he had higher draft choices. Because he wasn't drafting in that lower quadrant, with the playoff teams, drafting down in the bottom four of the first round and all the rounds. And that's where it's a turnaround. And so,
they only hit two first rounders, Earl Thomas and Okung. Well, Okung had the ankles when he first came in, first 3 years.
Well, Bruce Irvin was a success.
Sherman.
Yeah, Bruce Irvin was a success, but also it's hard to hit on first rounders when you trade them away to get into the second round and get some more draft choices.
Oh yeah, what I'm saying, yeah. I'm talking about the lower round picks. You know, the fifth round picks, Cam Chancellor. You know, guys like and Doug Baldwin, free agent. They just hit on a lot of guys that they were exposed to, and now they don't have that luxury. That's one of the reasons why. They're not, you know, drafting as well as they did when they first started out. Yeah. Although I do have hopes for the next year.
No, I do too. I think that, you know, most people around the country have the negative vibe. I got more of the positive vibe. Do I think this is a Super Bowl team? No. Do I think it's a playoff team? Yes. And I think
these are my guys, man. You know, I'm a season ticket holder. I've been with the Seahawks ever since. I had tickets ever since Rick Meyer was a quarterback. You know how long that's been.
Mm-hmm. No question.
And, yeah, win or lose, they're my guys. But I do expect them to do well. And the good thing about football, even if the other team is better than you, you can still knock them on the can.
That's true. Hey, thank you for the call.
Take care.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Commando Dave. David, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. What's up, John Clayton?
Everything's going good.
That's what I'm saying, man. Great day for some croquet. But first, let me give a shout-out to a sports radio, Cal Ripken, a Hall of Famer for sure, a cat that brings it to the show week after week, longtime John Clayton show number one caller, JB in Renton. In my estimation, John Clayton, he's your Saturday morning sparring partner. JB in Renton hits you with NFL stuff that wakes you up and sets the tone for the rest of the show. The guy may be sitting there in Saints PJs, but he knows the entire NFL. And John Clayton, while I'm giving Iron Man shout-outs, let me give one to an Iron Woman, one of the greatest competitors of all time, mommy dearest on the court, Serena Williams. She lost in the final today at the All England Lawn Tennis and Croquet Club, but I'm pretty sure she was the only one in the tourney who just became a baby mama in the past 314 days. Moving to football, John Clayton, on Thursday on the John Clayton Show. Wait a minute, this is the John Clayton Show, and during the week, the show is simply called John Clayton. Do I have that right, John Clayton?
Yeah, that's correct.
All right. Well, on Thursday, John Clayton, I heard you talking about the Seahawks running game expectations, and when you said Russell Wilson will probably get 500 yards, it made me wince over
some
number.
No, I said I was saying 300 to 400.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, it even more to the point, made me wince over a conversation I had with my nephew, Mad Max, no relation to Beyond Thunderdome, but you know the numbers. You got the database, Professor. The Seahawks rushed for a total of 1,638 yards last year. Russell Wilson ran for 586, 554 of them. He wasn't even trying to pick up yards. He was simply running for his life, as caller John mentioned earlier. But here's the kicker, John Clayton. When you debit 95 quarterback carries that comprised those 586 yards from the Seahawks 2017 account, you have seven backs who combined for 1,052 yards on 311 attempts, in contrast to Marshawn Lynch, 891 carries on 270 yards on 7 carries with the Raiders, which tells me that the Seahawks let Beast Mode go a year earlier instead of a year late. And this season, the Hawks have got to run the ball like you've been talking about.
Yeah, and that's where I think they will be able to run the ball. I mean, the talent's there. I mean, the talent was there last year. The blocking wasn't.
I sure hope so.
Well, because, would you agree from what you saw, Alex Collins was the fifth most productive back as you're going through training camp? He gets 973 yards or so over with Baltimore. He's pretty talented. And, you know, you look at Chris Carson. Chris Carson looks good. You know, C.J. Procise is a talent, but he's always hurt. There's something there with Mike Davis. J.D. McKissick has speed, and you haven't seen him yet. You'll like Rashard Penny. Rashard Penny looks good.
Yeah, you keep saying that, so I can't wait to see him. Yeah, they got to be able to run the ball this year. Look, lastly, John Clayton, some of the points Dre made point to what Daniel Roberts of Yahoo Finance wrote yesterday in his article, how the NFL protest led to Papa John Snatter's downfall. Look, here's a high-level, high-profile, high-corporate guy taking the liberty to talk openly crazy on a conference call. The only instance the N-word should be used on a conference call is by a member of the co-op in The Wire. But as Daniel Roberts wrote, there was arguably no food brand more closely associated with American pro sports. And he mentioned that Jerry Jones is a Papa John's franchisee which led to some speculation that he was behind Papa John's comments last year about the protest affecting the sales. Now, I keep hearing you, John Clayton, say you don't know why the NFL doesn't just go back to the old anthem policy of having the players in the locker room, but as I mentioned a couple of weeks ago, the league doesn't want to give back the money. It gets to be patriotic, and as I heard you say last week, one of the owners told you they don't want to look as though they gave in versus solving the problem. But this Papa John's thing, John Clayton, shows the NFL has got a big, big problem that is just destined to get worse, don't you think?
Well, it's not going to get better by not fixing the problem, and they got to fix the problem right. by getting the politics out of the game and getting these type of demonstrations out of the game. And I'm not trying right. to hold back the players and what they do, but what I'm trying mm-hmm. to say is that, hey, there's one way to get this out of the conversation. Keep the players in the locker room like they – if you need to pay back the military, pay back the military. They're losing more than they've got in receipts. They got a problem and they got to fix it. Hey, Commando, thank you.
Good being with you, John Clayton. Thank you.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
Our producer, Matt Nelson, getting the week off this week and next week. So we thank Curtis Rogers for running things and being the producer today. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Victor in Auburn. Hey, Victor.
Hey, John. Another great show.
Well, thank you.
Any series this coming up week?
This week, no. I think I've got a whole bunch that week in the right before the start of training camp. I know I got about 25th, 26th. I know I got that Friday. And then I'm actually going to go down and I think to San Francisco and do a 49er camp for him.
Okay, nice. It was a good feeling the other day. Hey, do you still do any of the traveling for the training camp now that you're not with the ESPN?
Not as much, no. Because I want to be as many Seahawk practices as possible because they practice right during my show. So want to be available for that. And then, of course, I'll be hitting the preseason games and all that. I'll go to the Hall of Fame. I got a couple trips. I got to go to Buffalo. Got to go to Miami. So I'll get around.
Okay, two quick things, John. Definitely agree with Dre and Commando, and it's a much larger problem than just the NFL, John. There's a lot of nonsense going on. And then the other thing, John, do you believe Champ Bailey will be a first round Hall of Fame?
I do. Yeah. I mean, he was one of the best in that era, and he had so many Pro Bowls, was so good for so long. So yeah, I do think that he'll make it as a first ballot, in my opinion.
Yeah, he was one of the best, especially with the tackling ability of tackling. Does each individual player get to choose which team they go with, or how do they determine that?
Yeah, they get to choose pretty much because it's not
like,
the choice of the team.
Is he going to go as a Niner or as a Cowboy or not? Or who?
Who are you talking about?
Like Terrell Owens. Like
Terrell Owens.
What team?
Well, it doesn't matter because he didn't show up. You know, yeah. And I don't know if he had the support of the teams. Philadelphia wouldn't want him give an honor, and I think there's some strains with the 49er relationship. So, but it's up to that. That's why, I mean, pretty evident to know that Champ Bailey is going to pick the Denver Broncos because that's where he's had his main success, and the Redskins traded him.
Just a hypothetical question. Could, say, the Redskins just get another player in the hall, could they contact Champ Bailey and say, hey, here's some type of financial prize, can you be – going as a Redskin
that wouldn't be right. Hey, Victor, got to run.
Right,
and again, thank you. I'll be back next week at 9 and, of course, Monday at 10. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.